the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
He says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from textile to gossip. Listen and to hear what Max is to share. LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends.
LA Talk Radio, this is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. It is 11 o'clock on the nose in New York. That means it's 8 o'clock in LA. So how's everyone doing tonight? Well, happy Cinco de Mayo, everyone. What are you up to today? Are you Drunko de Mayo? Are you Cinco de Mayo? Are you just chilling? Do you not even care? Let me know. Tweet me at Max Tucci. Well, tonight, you know, we've got a big show because we've got so many tweets already. And thank you, Meganella, for always tweeting us and telling us what's going on and giving the countdown. I got to give you a mad shout out and big props there. You know, there's been the whole Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman case in the news again. So better to talk about it tonight here and really see what's going on. And we've got Hunter Cross joining us tonight because, you know, he's our legal analyst here and gives us really the scoop on what's going on. He's studied and skilled in the law, so he's going to join us. And so is Robert Zimmerman Jr., who is the brother of George Zimmerman. He's going to be joining us shortly. But, you know, we got to talk about some things before we get into the heart of the show, the meat of the show. So I've got to let you all know I flew Delta to get to New York at Delta.com. Flights are on sale now. So big up to Delta for getting me here. I thank you because I had a great flight where I met some wonderful people. So I have to say hi to my new family aboard Delta. And happy birthday to my new friend, Sandy Coffey. It's funny because that's her real name, Sandy Coffey, and she's NBC6 news sports correspondent for Florida. So we met on the plane on Delta coming up to New York. And what was funny was I was thinking with my mom, we should do a show, Coffee with Max in the Morning. What do y'all think? Tweet me at Max Tucci and let me know. Speaking of Coffee with Max in the Morning, what are you all up to? I need your tweets because we're going to be an interactive show tonight with questions. Tweet me. Don't call into the show tonight. I need you to tweet. Because we're not going to be taking any calls tonight. So just please tweet me at Max Tucci. And of course, Hunter Cross, Hunter X Cross. You could tweet him too. And give us your questions for the show tonight. We'll be happy to try to answer them as we go on. Also, what else is going on? Well, this coming weekend, I've got a great, great, great event going on with Patti LaBelle, the one and only Miss Patti LaBelle. We're doing at the Lehman Center, May 11th. Now, there's going to be a great concert. It's going to be an intimate concert, an evening with Patti LaBelle, supporting the Montefiore Children's Hospital. I'm sorry, the Children's Hospital at Montefiore and the Lehman Center. So we're really excited about that night. And tickets are still on sale. You can check out the Lehman Center. You can go online and buy tickets. They're $100 to come to the VIP concert, or they range. But go online, check that out. Call the box office. Make reservations. Join us. Patti LaBelle is going to be waiting for you. And Xavier Lewis, you all know him from Give Back. We're going to play that song later tonight. He's going to be joining us. He's the opening act for Patti LaBelle. So we're glad that Xavier Lewis is going to be playing that night. And I know that Patti's going to love him because you all know how much we love him here on LA Talk Radio. And speaking about music, I have to give a big, big shout out to Thomas Hibner. You all know that he made the country charts. So congratulations, Thomas Hibner. We got to say to him, dream bigger. Keep dreaming. Because you have a lot of things going on in your life. All right, well, we've got Hunter Cross standing by, so let's just jump into this before we give you, because you know it's the first Sunday of the month, the Maya Love Vedic Astrological Forecast. That's coming up in just a bit. But before we get there, Hunter Cross, welcome back to Max and Friends.
Thanks, Max. Thanks for having me.
Hey, you know what? We haven't heard this in a while. Ronan, do we have Hot Topics? Can you hit that? If you can, let me know. Because we... There you go. We are going to drop it on Max and Friends. I totally forgot we had that little clip. Thanks to Sharon Agati. This is Hot Topics, and Hunter Cross is here. So, Hunter Cross, what's going on, my friend?
Not much, Max.
So, you know,
I'm
the news lately.
I'm looking forward to talking to what?
Yeah, we're going to have a good show tonight. You know, the news lately, before we get into the Zimmerman case, we're going to talk about Boston because I know that it aggravated you, and there's some things going on that upset you and upset me and really it has to blame with people like us in the media. So, tell me what you think about Boston and why all of a sudden people are in the situation that we're in.
Well, it ties in with what we're going to be talking tonight with Robert Zimmerman, because I think that Obviously, Robert isn't going to be able to tell us intimate details about what his brother told him, but we're going to get an interesting kind of insider's view of how the media manipulates the news and how we kind of interpret the news and what's going on through this lens that is the media. And, you know, it sounds like a big conspiracy, but when you look at the news events, and Boston was a really excellent example, we're going to talk about the Trayvon Martin incident and how the media molded our impression of who Trayvon was and who George Zimmerman was in the same, very much the same way that the media molded what we thought of Joe Carr and his brother. From the moment the FBI listed these guys as the likely bombers, the media just simply accepted that as fact. You could not watch a discussion on Friday morning on the news, because I was on a flight Friday morning, actually, that morning after the news broke on Thursday night. And the morning news shows, I was flipping on the plane from one station to the next. Every single one of them was spinning tales about theories of this, theories of that, making up stuff as they went along to fill the time, because they have to fill this enormous amount of time with drivel. Then during the entire time that they're analyzing the news, so to speak, you see pictures over and over and over again of the alleged bombers walking through the streets with that kind of, you know, they light their faces up so you can see them in the crowd, over and over again, as if they were the only people in the entire crowd who lost a bag. I'm not saying that they didn't do it, and I'm not saying that they haven't got the right people. I'm talking about the media, that the media simply accepted it, hook, line, and sinker, that these were the guys. And there was no room during the entire narrative, during the entire morning news cycle, there was no room for second-guessing whether those guys actually did it or not. The media had already convicted those guys.
Well, did you hear that Russia had already spoke to the U.S. to say, listen, be aware of these two guys? Did you hear that story?
Yeah. Well, and now, the FBI investigated.
But now here's my question. You know, and we were talking about this earlier tonight. I had a huge discussion, a panel, and we were discussing, you know, the transparency of the CIA and the FBI, and why do they keep cases so closed? And do you think as a nation we should be a transparent nation where we're all informed of what's going on and who should we look out for?
No, because there are protections that are built into our system that protect you and I from the snooping eye of the government. And we just simply as a society have decided that we're going to balance our need to have certain information and make it public with our desire to maintain a certain amount of privacy and not to have the government watching us and telling us what to do. For example, when the government was told that the Russians had some information about how do you pronounce their last name? Tassarov? The bombers, Joe Carr and his brother. Those, they had gotten information about them and I think it's 90 days that they can investigate them and they can tap their phones and they can interview people and they can do all kinds of investigative work about these suspicions for 90 days. If they cannot find something during those 90 days, which would cause the government to suspect that they're going to do something else, in other words, find some kind of smoking gun, find out that they're plotting, or find out that they're talking to other plotters, something tangible. If the government doesn't find anything in those 90 days, they're required to close the file. That's because we have decided in this country, and it's a law that says they have to close the file. Why? Because we've decided that we do not want our government snooping on us every time they get a bug in their ear that we may be up to something no good.
I get it. But now here's my question, because, you know, we all are part of this. If you see something, say something. You know, we become so desensitized to what's going on around us that they have signs and billboards everywhere that say, if you see something, say something. You know, and we just basically want to be neighborhood watchmen, don't you think?
Well, I think there's a role for people to be neighborhood watchmen. The question is, in the Trayvon case, the question is, did it somehow get out of control? We accepted in the very early stages of this, there's a lot of emotion involved because those people who have kids and because of the youth of this of Trayvon and how his life was snuffed out so young, that we suddenly decided that we were going to blame the guy who was being the so-called vigilante. Oh, he's just one of those. He's a wannabe cop. And we just kind of spun a tale about him.
Now, hold on. Now, you know from the beginning how I kind of stood on this whole case. I said, until we hear everything that happens, we can't judge or point fingers. Because this could have gone, and we spoke about this too, this could have gone in any direction. This could have gone in the sense that, you know what? What if Trayvon had pulled the trigger on Zimmerman? Then all the media would have gone to the Zimmerman family. And now this family, even though they're not in the spotlight as much as the Trayvon family was when this first happened back in April, now here they are. A family that has a son, you know, with questions that need to be answered, facts that need to be approved. And here we are saying, what's really going on? And this whole story could have been changed in one instant.
Well, that's the whole point of the discussing this in the context of what role does the media play here? Is the media really helping us get to the truth, or are they obstructing our access to the truth? Are they creating the narrative in the very early days of a story and running with the narrative that they've created, rather than simply doing investigative journalism? Back in the day, before we had 24-hour news stations and stations that were dedicated just to news, you would have regular programming, and then they would break into the regular programming when there was a, you know, something like this, where they would have 5 minutes or so of Walter Cronkite telling you what they've just discovered. You didn't have people trying to fill hour after hour after hour over 24 hours with information during the course of a live investigation. So they just kind of make stuff up just to fill up time. And I think the truth suffers in that.
Well, they always say the truth crushed the ground, so rise again. Hey, Ronan, can we get a song going real quick? Because I want you all to hear what you're going to hear this Saturday, May 11th, at the Lehman Center, which is a song called Give Back by Xavier Lewis. And when we're back, we're going to have Hunter Cross here, and we're going to have Zimmerman with us. So stay tuned.
I see all your smiles and all the tears showing down on your faces. But I know all the while it's gonna be okay, yes it is. Just open up your eyes, open up your eyes. The sun is soon to shine. Love's out. Even if you don't give a dime, give your heart.
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Succi. Welcome back. That was Xavier Lewis. Let your light shine on, Xavier Lewis. Hey, everyone, if you go right now to iTunes and you buy that song, put in Give Back Unicorn, 70% of the proceeds are going to go to the Unicorn Children's Foundation. So check out unicornchildrensfoundation.org. It's a great organization raising money for kids with neurodiversities and building a school for children with every syndrome that falls under there, from autism to ADD, ADHD, etc. unicornchildrens.org, and check out also unicornchildrensfoundation.org, and also do check out that song Give Back on iTunes. Well, that's a taste of Xavier Lewis, and if you want more, he's going to be singing with Patti LaBelle opening act at the Lehman Center on May 11th, 2013, just the day before Mother's Day, Saturday night. So if you need to get your mama a ticket, you don't know what you're going to get your mother for Mother's Day, a Patti LaBelle, an intimate evening with her, I think is the perfect ticket to get your mother for Mother's Day. So call 718-960-8835 or check out the Lehman Center Concert Hall, because Patti LaBelle is going to be singing. I'm chairing the event with Bree Bythewood, and we're really getting excited because the Children's Hospital of Montefiore is going to benefit from this, as well as Lehman. So do come out Saturday, May 11th, 2013, 8 p.m. at the Lehman Center in the Bronx. 718-960-8835 to get your tickets. RSVP now, because tickets are limited. Just the fact that Patti LaBelle is going to be there is getting me so excited. Well, speaking of excitement, I know that tonight is the night that a lot of people are tweeting us. We've got them coming from all over. So I thank you for your tweets, and I encourage you to keep on tweeting us here on Max and Friends on LA Talk Radio. Tweet me at Max Tucci. Austin Peterson, thank you for your tweet. Kermit Brown, thank you for your tweet. Kim5564, thank you for your tweet. Keep them in. Nettles18, keep them coming in. So we're going to get into this. Hunter Cross is joining us tonight, as is Robert Zimmerman Jr., because we've got a lot to talk about. And there's a great saying that the truth that's crushed to the ground shall rise again. Now, remember, everyone, be respectful, because this is something that's happening right now. So don't try to call into the studio, because we're not going to be taking your calls tonight, because we really just want to have a discussion to let you know that there's a lot of views out there, and you can decide which view you want to stand upon. But before you have a view, stand on the truth, stand on different views, and then go from there, and, you know, be respectful is all I'm saying. So, Hunter, are you ready to get into this? Because we've got Robert Zimmerman Jr. with us tonight.
Absolutely.
Robert, pull up your mic and welcome to Max and Friends.
Hi, Max. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad that you're here tonight. So just before we get into the show, you know, explain to people exactly who you are, because we all know this name now, Zimmerman, and you are the brother of George. But tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, George is my younger brother, and a little bit about me. I'm very passionate about food, which is one of the reasons I agreed to do this particular interview, and very, very passionate. I learned from Italians. I'm fluent in Italian, and miss cooking a lot. We've been a little displaced, so it's not really the easiest thing to do. I'm also a musician. I was working as a for-hire professional musician before this all happened, and I moved to Florida to help my family out with the situation.
Mm-hmm. So let's just throw people for a minute. Allora, io ho detto buonasera e benvenuti a Max and Friends.
Grazie.
No, figurate. So, you know, this is why, you know, for me and for the public, I think it's important to say, you know, you were a little displaced. So it's interesting that, you know, that's how all of a sudden your life has changed to be in this,
right.
You know, you went from being passionate about food. So you and I can be on the same page with that, because that's how I am, especially coming from the restaurant. So, you know, we have all these passions in life, and then all of a sudden something happens, and what you were passionate about between music and food has now changed. And really, you know, your time has been consumed now with supporting your family, which I think anyone would do no matter what side you're on. So, Hunter, you know, weigh in on this tonight, and let's discuss and have a nice conversation on what's going on and how we really need to know the truth.
I think one of the interesting things I think that many may want to know, Robert, is about how this does impact families. How, when these incidents, we're going to call it an incident, because I think at this point that's all we really can say. We know we have a certain handful of facts that we accept as true, that an actual scuffle occurred and Trayvon got shot, and that George shot him. We don't really know what led up to that. I'm sorry?
Right. Well, I said, sure. No, I'm agreeing with you. And you asked about, you know, family, and how does a family get impacted? strangely, it brought us together. I've heard from other people that they would have thought that something like this would have driven us apart. And, you know, sometimes the word is thrown around, wouldn't you just disown someone like that? But it's absolutely quite the contrary is what's happened. We all have stuck together. And it wasn't just since we became, or since I, you know, started engaging the media. It happened before then, and it happened the following day. George was devastated by what had happened.
If I can stop you for just a second, Robert, where were you living at the time that you learned that the incident occurred?
I was living in Virginia, where I had been living for all of my adult life, and the rest of my family lived in Florida.
Real quick question, too. Like, you know, everyone dreads the phone call that, you know, someone in our family has passed away, or we get that tragic phone call or the emergency phone call. Where were you when you got that phone call, and like, what was going through your mind?
I was in my kitchen. Our little sister called, and our father had just been released from the hospital, not even 4 days before the incident. And she told me that someone had died. So immediately I thought it was our dad. She said, it's not who you think, it's not someone in our family, but something horrible has happened. And it involves George. And George is going to call you and tell you himself what happened. So it doesn't matter. I mean, when someone dies, it still hits you. It's kind of like everything kind of stops, and all you can hear is silence. And it sounds like a second lasts an eternity. But the next day, George called, and he told me what had happened.
So I'm curious, since part of the discussion I hope we're going to have tonight has to do with what effect the media has on developing the narrative that follows when an incident occurs, and whether or not the role that the media plays is the right role, or whether or not they skew the facts to fit their own narrative for one reason or another. So when you were living in Virginia, my recollection is that there was somewhat of a gap between the February date of the shooting and when this actually became
a news story.
Got the attention of the national media. It wasn't right away. It was some weeks later, if I'm not mistaken. Isn't that right?
That's right. Yes. Yes. My understanding is that the attorneys representing Trayvon Martin's family hired a media strategist to kind of promote their message, which went unquestioned by the media. Obviously, we know now, because there's been a lawsuit against the Homeowners Association where George lived, that Mr. Crump and Ms. Jackson, or Mr. Crump is the attorney who represented them in this particular lawsuit, but these people had a financial interest in the outcome of this case, or in at least shaping an outcome as they saw. And the media doesn't do its job, in my opinion, when they take anything that someone says as fact. When that person has their hand in a pot of gold, they should rebut assertions that people like that make and say, well, you know, obviously you represent a family through a media company, and you bringing your interests to the table are going to color the way that you say things. And the police had some involvement or engagement after it became a national story, and the media was more interested in rebutting what the police had to say based on what this handful of attorneys and their media strategist, Ryan Julison, had to say versus rebutting the people spreading these fabrications in the beginning. And that's what's really disappointing.
Do you think that the media's role in the beginning was more of a reality show host more than, say, journalists looking for the truth? That's the way, in my mind, that's the way it seems like it was being played out. That they loved the drama of the families and the lawyers on the one hand blabbing about this and that, and how Trayvon was such an innocent guy, and all the pictures we saw on the internet, he practically had fuzzy slippers on. The image that they were making of that Trayvon was somehow this innocent who was gunned down. Even the fact that the Skittles thing and the iced tea, the whole bit was to make him seem like a juvenile, like a child was stricken. And then they decided to make the George to make George the antagonist. We don't really know whether those are the facts or not.
No, and the media has changed, and it is, you know, most media today is the other half of an entertainment company, and the media really has changed. They were talking before my segment on this program about how it kind of seems to be this reactionary thing in the age of social media and 24-hour news. You know, the public feeds the programming, not facts, unfortunately. And so journalists answer to the public. They have a financial reason to do so. They have to sell advertising time. And the public shouldn't be as misinformed as they are, the people informing those who are supposed to inform us. And I think that mm-hmm. that's really, really key, because the people who were informing us at the beginning, a lot of their assertions from two shots fired, and I could go on and on about things that Mr. Crump and Ms. Jackson fabricated, have now been proven to be untrue or simply strange at best. You know, I think it's bizarre to even...
Let me ask you a quick question, Robert. You know, what is it tonight, basically? You know, everyone has an intention when they come onto this show. So what is your intention tonight to have your message heard, to what you want people to know about truth?
Well, I think my intention tonight is to make clear, when you hear something on the news, or just because you see something in a magazine or something like that, just remember that there's a money trail attached to that, to what you're hearing. There's advertisers, there's very deep set interests and agendas that have their interests at heart. They're not necessarily your interests at heart in terms of telling you the truth. And also going forward, to remember that court is where truth comes out. Truth doesn't come from attorneys who have a financial interest in the outcome of how the public perceives the person they're trying to sue. Truth comes out in court. And a lot of the truth in this investigation, a lot of the evidence, has already come out. And in my opinion, and in many legal minds, it speaks for itself as to George's innocence. And a lot of it was kind of suppressed, like the picture of George bloodied up. I have a hard time believing that if that had come to light on day one, an employee of the state had it, the police officer who took the picture, that had come to light on day one, there wouldn't have been a little bit more rebuttal. But we didn't know things about George. We knew or thought we knew that he was white, and that was the police report listed him as that, and that's an understandable mistake. But then we let that race dovetail into attorneys' narratives, which was, well, if he were not white, if he were black and Mr. Martin were white, he would have been arrested for sure. And, you know, justice isn't always about taking someone to trial. There are laws specifically about self-defense when people lose their life. I mean, they don't apply when you poison someone or something like that. When you do something in self-defense, there are these laws to protect us so that your life isn't ruined after you had to save your life. And anyone who has a firearm on them knows that when you're losing consciousness and have every reason to believe that violence is going to continue to escalate, the last thing you can afford to do is to have your firearm taken away from you, because if you're wrong about that, you could be dead wrong. And so unfortunately, someone lost their life, but it's clear to me and clear to many that George did what he had to do to protect his own life.
Well, we'll find out. I mean, that you're absolutely right, Robert, that in June or whenever after that the trial comes up this year, we'll know more about those facts. But I don't know those facts. I know that Max doesn't know those facts. And as much as you believe in those facts, you obviously come from a point of view that is, let's call it tainted. It's tainted because of your personal relationship with George, so I get that, and that's fair.
Well, it's also, I understand that, but it's also, there is not contradictory fact to any of the assertions that George made to the police. And let's remember, he had the Fifth Amendment to protect him at the time, but he cooperated.
Well, the person who knows the other side of that story is dead.
Well, the evidence, though, is not dead, and the evidence was collected. And some of the things that bother me in particular is when you have, for example, people making a racial situation out of this. You have the president of the NAACP going out and saying nothing was done to investigate. Okay, so I'm his brother, and I understand what you're saying. I get that criticism all the time. But you do have someone
who represents black people. It's not a criticism, it's a fact. I mean, we all kind of, as families, we circle wagons when
right.
we have our own.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, but you know, you have someone like Ben Jealous of the NAACP say nothing was done, or his clothes were not even collected to look for DNA or anything else. You know, these people get away with saying things like that. They are
well,
not rebutted.
Yeah, but
they
listen,
are not questioned.
But Robert, wasn't there, and I'm not defending the media, but the media has a lot of time to fill. And if they have to fill this vacuum, they're going to go to the place where people are talking. And my recollection is that the police were not forthcoming with this information. There was nobody on George's side, if you will. There was nobody coming out with information and explaining what was going on. And George remained quiet for quite a long time. So while he's not to blame necessarily, but there was a vacuum of information, and the people on the Trayvon side were filling it.
I agree, and I think that part of that vacuum, and I made this clear when I started engaging the media, was that we were not able to rebut these assertions being made because we were in fear of our lives. And that's just not me. That's, you know, George himself. There were flyers being distributed, wanted dead or alive, his picture with crosshairs on his face being distributed at these rallies and at these marches for justice, or justice as they saw it was to get George dead or alive. And when you're really threatened like that, I lived in Virginia. The Florida State Police called me on my birthday to tell me that my home was not a safe place to be. Now, this is, you have to think, how does a family even get together to even start to rebut something like this when you live five states away and the cops are on the phone telling you get out of your house, in essence?
Yeah.
You know, so there was a vacuum, but it was because of these continually escalating threats of violence, where, as Al Sharpton said, we're going to take it to another level. We don't know what that level is. You know, we have to take these threats seriously.
Absolutely. Now, everyone, hold your thought real quick. Ronan, what is everyone listening to right now?
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends.
LA Talk Radio. This is Max and Friends. I'm your host, Max Tucci. If you're just joining us now, we've got Hunter Cross with us tonight, and we have Robert Zimmerman Jr., the brother of George Zimmerman. We're talking about the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman case right now, and we have a tweet from Iron Fist that says, "One thing media has mastered is that it's easier to tell a lie than to undo a lie." Hunter, what do you have to say about that?
I think that what we've learned from not only this, the Zimmerman issue, but we've also learned this. We've seen it in the Boston Marathon media coverage. The media has decided that it's more important for them to be first, whether in saying something that they learned, whether it's John King saying that they think they have a suspect and he's black, they've made an arrest when they didn't make an arrest, or whatever it is. They say things that aren't corroborated. They are constantly talking. They'll blab whatever comes in one ear. They'll blab it. And they figure that if maybe out of 100% of the time, maybe 10% of the time they're right, they're hoping people won't remember the 90% of times they're wrong. And they're hoping somehow by being first that it makes some difference. I don't understand how it makes any difference.
When you say that, it brings to mind NBC and the lawsuit George has brought. GZVNBC.com details it. But one of the things in the complaint is basically that, you know, the media made their bets. You know, they made their wager. They just figure sometimes, hey, this guy, he's a racist. Let's edit phone calls to make him look like a racist. Or
yes, they decided. That's why I said it was a reality show. The media decided they were going to take this instance and create a real-life drama reality show out of it, and that's what they set about doing. And most of us, and I admit, and Max and I had this discussion many times during the event, that I bought it. I bought into it. And
I totally did not. Sure. You know, just for the record, I did not buy into it. You know, Robert, this is – Hunter is on the show often, and we've had disputes about this. Hunter's a father thinking about, you know, the son issue and how Trayvon was a son. I said, listen, all of this, you know, it's literally – it's like Scooby-Doo, and everyone's talking about, you know, the press is like Scooby-Doo and who's who and what's what and what's going on and who said what and who did what, and it's happening time and time and over again. And it's coming to a point where it disgusts me because, you know, I like to keep everything on the truth side of things, and I like to have both sides of the story before I make a judgment. But, you know, the media made this whole thing, especially if you were a parent, to automatically go right against your brother. And, I mean, you know, Hunter and we discussed this.
Yeah, people have kind of dug in their heels. You know, there is not a vacuum now. I'm on your show now. I've done numerous programs with all kinds of different formats with the media, but you'll have Charles M. Blow of the New York Times on C-SPAN last night lecturing a group of law students that, you know, George was on the Neighborhood Watch and he had his gun, and you know you're not supposed to do that on Neighborhood Watch, and he had been told many times not to have that. So despite there not being a vacuum now, despite, I mean, it's been known since I went on the air March 29th on CNN, he wasn't on the neighborhood watch. He was running an errand, and he got distracted by something. But the whole gun thing,
that's a whole other story. I mean, we haven't really heard a whole lot of people saying that George shouldn't be allowed to have a gun because there's this enormous, everyone's got their rights to the guns. They can't take my guns. So the idea that he had a gun, people seem to be cool with that. It's just somehow because he adopted this role as a neighborhood watch person and he has a gun. Ah, he's a commando. He's one of those condo commando pains in the ass that drive us crazy. And maybe he is. I don't know. But the point is that the narrative that was painted for us is that's what he was. We didn't even have to know anything more about it.
Right, exactly. And what my point is, it persists to this day. George is a lot of things. He was enrolled in college for criminal justice. George was a mentor to African-American children.
My point George is, went out Robert, and, none of that makes a difference. It doesn't really make a difference whether or not George went to school
every day, here's the
and whether Trayvon eat the Skittles or whatever, M&M's. It doesn't make a difference. He could have been an angel. The point is, if George didn't have a gun, this would have been just basically two guys bloodied until one decided to run away. But instead, one of them had a gun.
I think that's a little presumptive. We don't actually know that. If George didn't have a gun, what would have happened to George? By my estimation, if he continued, violence escalates, and the person that crossed the line into the criminal that night was Trayvon Martin. When you assault someone or batter someone, that's not, there's a lot of things that are questionable about George or curious, but there should be a line between what is questionable or curious and what is criminal. And the person who assaulted him gave no indication they were going to stop, despite a witness coming out and saying, I'm going to call the police, despite George screaming for help, and despite the broken nose and the blows he did manage to land on the back of his head. You don't just assume violence is just going to go away because someone decided to stop.
No, that was presumptuous. My point was that there wouldn't have been a shooting. We don't know whether or not somebody would have died anyway because their head got beaten against the pavement. We don't know. We don't know what would have happened. And we don't
but
know
you know what
happened.
Hold on, Hunter. Here's the thing. Just like I said earlier in the show, this could have changed in 1 second. And Robert, I'm sure your family has discussed this. What if, Trayvon got the gun? And what if, there was a different shooting and George was killed instead of Trayvon? It would have turned the whole scenario around, and then the media would have gone after the Zimmerman family, and and there would have been candles erected in front of their homes. There's so many what ifs. But the point is, where does Robert, this is a question I'm throwing to you. In the media, where is the line that has to be drawn? What would you say the media has? What's the line that you think the media has to draw?
I think the public is suffering now a little bit because there's this blurry line between what is opinion or editorial writing or reporting and fact reporting, and they all are under the same umbrella of the media. So someone Googles Max Tucci, and let's say an opinion writer wrote something nasty about you last week, but they read it in the LA Times. Mm-hmm. The perception is, when they get 250,000 results of Max Tucci or whatever the case may be, well, the news says this because it was in the LA Times, so it's real. And so I think that the media has an interest in blurring that line. I think it's become very reactive to what the public wants to confirm for their feelings, because it's very human to psychologically want to declare a villain and a victim, and then reconcile that emotionally with your position. And like I said, there isn't a vacuum anymore. There are things that don't need to be repeated, like he was on the neighborhood watch and went after someone with a gun. But like I said, that's just on the air just yesterday on C-SPAN. He shouldn't. Mr. Blow should know better than that, and a lot of people should know better than that. But he's an opinion writer.
I agree with you, and I think the opinion writers are usually also question writers, and they should just put a question mark at the end of each sentence because they're not going off of facts and truth. And you know what? That's why previous to you coming on air tonight, Hunter and I went over the Wikipedia page that was dedicated to this, and all of that doesn't even I shouldn't say it doesn't matter anymore because it does matter. That's why we're here today. But it's like start from today, from the facts that are happening today, people, and look at what's happening now because a lot of things have uncovered themselves, and the truth is rising from the ground again. So there's going to be all new stories, and the and what's going to be interesting is take a snapshot of the Wikipedia page today, and then in July, take another pay, you know, take another snapshot of it, and right. you'll see how it right. changed. But people are only going to remember the one that's been there for 3 years. So, you know, be very cautious, people, with what you read, especially with what you hear. And, you know, that's why I'm bringing you the source tonight, so that you can formulate your own decisions and your own thoughts with hearing the truth from one side. And, you know, I always said that the Martin family is more than welcome to join us on Max and Friends if they would like to. But, you know, don't always believe what you're saying. And really, you have to take snapshots of these Wikipedia pages, because they really do change quite frequently. So, you know, on that note, right. because this, you know, the discussion get heated and everyone can be passionate about what they believe and what should have happened and the truth here and there. But, you know, the bottom line is that this case is happening, what, June 10th?
Yes, that's when it's scheduled for trial.
Mm. So obviously you and your whole family are going to be there.
Yeah, now, you know, that's yeah. the decision we all have to make independently, but, you know, I plan on being there.
Yeah. And now, have you had any exchanges with the Martin family at all? Have they spoken to your family?
I did. Mm-hmm. No, I made a public exchange on September 24th on Good Day LA. I traveled to Los Angeles to express our condolences because, you know, you can't express condolences too late. There was a lot of safety concerns about any of us engaging the media before that, but I expressed our condolences. We were told by their attorney that they would not comment on it, and I respect that. That's, you know, they can comment or not. And the only other thing that I did was to say on Trayvon Martin's birthday that we're not going to put up with calling Trayvon things like thug or, you know, mm-hmm. language he got what he deserved type things, because mm-hmm. this is a very straightforward tragedy. Someone mm-hmm. did lose their life, and there is no high-fiving in our family, and never has been, mm-hmm. at the fact that, you know, George walked away with his life and that Trayvon Martin didn't. Unfortunately, while it's a tragedy, it's also an act of self-defense. And there was a gun involved, and we can't take all of those factors back now and wish there was some other outcome. You know, this is the reality that we're stuck with. But going forward, I don't know, because the media loves to pat themselves on the back no matter what happens. But I think there's going to be some people in the media, and there's evidence of it already, now that discovery, because Florida is an open discovery state, which means you get to see the evidence against you before trial starts, and almost in totality, I think some people are really starting to understand that there are very specific things that people created, fabricated, or very specific taglines of, you know, will you tell me a child with Skittles or a man with a 9mm gun? There's a lot of men with 9mm guns.
Of course. Listen, there were yeah. hoodie tops made with Skittles and Arizona iced tea on them. I mean, this is how absurd this is getting. You know, and the whole thing where, you know, is to me, it's like, listen, the court date is coming up. Truth will prevail in court. That's what we have to watch. And until then, I mean, really, everyone needs to sit tight.
Robert, I have a question for you.
Let's hope for justice.
Robert, was there, you talked about the fact that you've been able to be a little more vocal over the course of the last number of months. Was there a turning point, and if there was, what caused it, that made you feel less fearful for your life, that maybe the threat subsided, you know, the rhetoric was not quite so inflammatory? What happened to allow you to be able to come more public?
Well, the first time was when I had to leave my home. I went on the air 3 days after that because they were calling for my brother's head to the tune of $10,000. And I just thought the whole racial aspect of this was getting way out of control, but that the people feeding or you know, creating that innuendo were not ever rebutted. You know, the, before I went on the air, it was still, you know, the neighborhood watch man chased after and gunned down with a gun. Then I went on the air and people like Alan Dershowitz started joining the conversation, you know, really brilliant minds saying, we really don't know what happened, and taking all of this as fact from interested parties is a little irresponsible at the time. That started to change. Now, what happened again in September was George had offered his condolences. They were spurned. They were not well received. Our family thought it was important to not have that unsaid, just as a measure of decency when someone loses their life. It's not something that you should avoid. You should offer your condolences when someone loses their life, no matter what the circumstances are. And I did go to Los Angeles to start engaging the media, and not from Florida, because of the safety aspect and because there's that geographical difference and there's kind of a 3-hour news cycle buffer if you will. And, you know, the East Coast is on a different clock than the West Coast, and I wouldn't be so easy to find. And I got a lot of work done out there in LA. But what has changed is that going forward, we want people to know that our family, a core value in our family is truth, that George told his family the truth, that despite George, myself, our father being called liars, being called racist, and all of the other things people say about us, the truth is not going to be revealed to everyone in court. To many, the truth is going to be confirmed. The truth that George told starting that night, the truth George told to the members of his family, and the truth that myself as a family member have relayed to the public. That is the truth. It always will be the truth. It's an unfortunate event, and it was an act of self-defense. Now, the people who went out to defile those laws, those self-defense laws, to defile the process of law, I hope are held just as accountable as my family has been. We've been a very open book throughout this entire process, and any questions fair, and I don't have issues answering questions or taking things on the air. I don't go through a strategist to talk to Max Tucci or anybody, and or I don't get booked through people like that. And, you know, going forward at the end of all of this, we really need to heal. We need to come together to heal and to realize that throwing down race just to make something more interesting is irresponsible, and it hurts America. And throwing down race to sell advertising slots hurts mm-hmm. America. There's a new generation, unfortunately, now of kids growing up that are going to have this, pseudo-reality implanted in their minds that, you know, they're somehow suspicious because they're wearing a hoodie, because that was the tagline at the time. This is now what they are growing up hearing, that, you know, this guy called and said there's a suspicious black guy who's wearing a hoodie, which is absolutely false. You know, so I hope that the kids growing up today are going to heal. I hope that the lesson in the end of all of this is that truth does come out in court, and you do have to put your faith in something. And ultimately, we're putting it in the judicial system.
Well, I wish I had as much faith as you do, because I think I'm more cynical. I think the fact that news has gone from being an expensive yet money-losing proposition for most networks back in the day to being something that has to create revenue to support itself is what has killed the fact-driven and journalist-driven news media. And I think that we're just going
to
have...
I'm going to have to cut you off. Wrap it up real quick. You're going to think what?
We're stuck with this, and every incident is going to have this kind of play. Every single one of them, unfortunately. And I'm not sure how to fix it, but that's where we're at.
All right.
I'm sure you're right about that in many ways. It's up to us to demand better, but I do want a red flag to go up every time someone injects race into any one of these stories in the future.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. And the one thing that I want to say, everyone, remember this quote, that truth that is crushed to the ground shall rise again. On that note, remember to take life to the max. I thank Robert Zimmerman Jr. for being here tonight. Hunter Cross, thank you. Your astrological forecast, everyone, you can go. I'm going to post it up online later so you can get it there, but we're going to play it next week for you all. Thank you all for tuning in. On the last note, Robert Zimmerman Jr., what would you like to say?
Oh, I just want to say, you know, thanks for having me on, and thank you to all of the people who have been so vocal in their support and who have helped George, and not just financially. They've helped him with prayer. They've helped him by offering kind words of support, and they've done the same thing to our family. So it would be remiss of me not to thank the many people who are supporting not just George, but they're supporting the law, due process of law, and by doing so have really helped us out a lot.
Hunter?
Good night. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for all being here. And guys, take life to the max. Stay focused. Love one another. And let's cut this race shit out. Love you all for tuning in. Have a great night.
Max and friends. He says what he wants. Ain't holding nothing back.